So first, some thanks. First of all, for all of you for being here on this beautiful morning. We could be out hiking. And thank you very much, Sharon, for not only your music, but the gifts of food that will be over across the way afterwards. And I've seen them. I know they're good. And Joyce, thank you very much for leading the service today. So the opening words this morning are about change. Change as the one constant in the world. There was an old Zen priest by the name of Suzuki Roshi who came to the United States in the 1950s, and one of his students asked the question, what is Buddhism in one sentence? But you could also say it, what is life in one sentence? And he thought about it, and he said, everything changes. Many of us find comfort in words when change is going on so radically in our lives. We can maintain calm or peace or at least some kind of comfort when things are happening out of our control. Some use prayer and meditation. Others read sacred texts like the Quran or the Bible. And I have one friend who reads one fortune cookie every day. And they use the fortune as a mantra for that day. And they use a lot of fortune cookies. For much of my life, I've been interested and influenced by the Chinese wisdom book, The Tao Te Ching, The Way and Its Power is one translation. Its 81 verses are at times mysterious and filled with wisdom. It was reputed to have been written by an elderly man named Lao Tzu, which literally translated means old master. He lived in the Warring States period, roughly in the 400s before the Common Era. Now, I don't know if any of you here know or speak Chinese. I do not. And ideographs in Chinese and in Japanese, for that matter, but particularly Chinese, are very hard to interpret because any words or sentences could be understood in different ways depending on context. And that's still the case. It makes translations from Chinese into other languages, other Western languages, very difficult. And if I'm wrong on this, by the way, you can come up and tell me I'm wrong after the service. But here's an example from the Tao Te Ching that I recently used in a service here. We are likely most familiar with the words, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. Anybody remember that? Okay, good. The version I used this morning in the reading was, the journey of 1,000 miles starts from beneath your feet. And that's from chapter 64 of Stephen Mitchell's interpretation. Here are a few other interpretations from that one line. The late Ursula Le Guin, wrote, the journey of 1,000 miles commenced with a single step. The contemporary writer Ron Hogan wrote a somewhat whimsical version of the Tao Te Ching, and his version of that line goes, and stop me if you've heard this one before, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. Lin Yutang from 1948 wrote, the journey of 1,000 li begins at one's feet. And finally, Jia Fu Fang and Jane English, who wrote a co-authored the translation, wrote, the journey of 1,000 miles starts from under one's feet. So there were differences between these two translation interpretations. Some say that the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step or a first step. Others say or imply that the journey begins with every step that we take. So what I'd like to do this morning for a bit is to explore both meanings. Is one better than the other? Is one right and the other wrong? Or might they all be correct? How might they apply in our daily lives, especially in these stressful and uncertain times of rapid, unpredictable change? So I'd like to indulge you with two stories that might express the differences, but maybe the similarities between the versions of this line. Let's start with, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step, the one that most of us know in English. When I hear it, I think of a journey that began a long time ago, maybe in childhood or adolescence, sometime maybe when we started trying to figure out what we were going to do in our lives. Did any of you, because I don't know if they still do this, did any of you take a vocational aptitude test in high school? You did? Okay, good. I'm not that old again. The ones based on, I think, multiple choice answers to many questions would somehow say, this is what you would be good at in your life. Now, I took one in my senior year of high school. Several of us sat in the guidance counselor's office to hear the results. Mine were interesting. I found out that I would not be good in the military or law enforcement. I didn't obey orders very well. Other professions like teacher or manager were possible. But the two that really were at the top of the list, they were startling. The test said I would be a good minister or race car driver. Now, I will tell you right now that I was appalled by the first and intrigued by the second. The riskiness of racing cars seemed to be appealing. The idea of a minister, well, simply, no way. I don't know if my path to ministry began there. I actually think that it started far earlier in early childhood. 6 months of age, 3 years, and 4 years of age, because of events that happened each of those times. So, think for a moment, what about your journeys? Did something important in your life, awareness of this is what I want to do in my life, or maybe about relationships, or sexual or religious orientation, begin with some first step a long time ago when you were a child or an adolescent or just plain young? Was there a sense of, this is what I want to be. This is who I am. Did it change or evolve over time? Did your vocation or what you studied in college evolve over the years? To me, that first version of a journey beginning with a first step sometime in the past speaks to a path that, well, it doesn't change too much. It guided us forward to where we are today without too much crisis. More often, though, life throws us a curve. It changes our directions, or at least forces us to reconsider who we are, what we're doing, and the direction that we're going. Second story. In 1986, I was living in Northern California. A woman I was dating at the time and I took a trip to Eastern Oregon to visit the high desert. We were on the way back to Davis, where Linda lived, and the road was one of these classic high desert roads, two lanes, and with embankments or even cliffs on either side, and you couldn't park on the side of the road because there wasn't really very much room. I was driving, and Linda was asleep in the back seat. And my car at the time, if I recall correctly, was one of these old Toyota Corollas that, well, it wouldn't go very fast, let's say. This was also before airbags. Another car ahead of me was ambling along, and I decided, since there was no traffic ahead of us, that I was going to pass. Remember, race car driver? So no traffic was coming from the other direction, And so I started moving out into the oncoming lane, and all of a sudden, a voice in my head said, "Go back now." It startled me, but I listened. I returned to my place behind the other car, and just at that moment, a pickup truck had come out of a road from the right and come our way. That driver had made a risky decision to come out quickly as the car in front of me was getting close to them. Might be 100 feet away. Had I not listened to that voice, there is no way I would have been able to pass the car in front of us. The embankments gave me no room to miss the oncoming truck. None of us would have been able to avoid a head-on collision. And there was no way I could have seen that pickup truck before it came out. So what was that voice that warned me? Some would call it our divine voice, our intuition, God. It really doesn't matter. But what did matter was that I listened. In a moment of rapid, uncontrollable, unpredictable change, and I listened, and I paid attention, and I returned to where I needed to be. Interestingly enough, that moment changed my path from bank manager at that time to ministry. The event was frightening. I never told Linda what happened, and she had slept through the whole incident. So again, has anyone here had a moment in their life when something beyond our control forced us to change course or to look again at our life and our priorities? Maybe it was a job we realized we no longer could do. Perhaps it was a class at school that so excited us that we went into an entirely new direction. Or we met someone doing a vocation and realized, that's my vocation, that's my work, and that's where I want to go. And I don't know if any of you have had that experience, but it's pretty powerful. There were other times too. I think of all those people in Australia who suddenly and with very little warning were forced from their homes because of the massive fires there. Change came suddenly. Decisions had to be made quickly, and there was no time to grab anything more than a few essentials. From one moment to the next, our world changes. The journey of 1,000 miles begins from under our feet. I mentioned earlier that the coronavirus is very much on our minds now. Will it become a pandemic in this country, with many getting sick or dying? We simply do not know. We're supposed to trust the authorities, but even that trust is somewhat questionable. People are reacting to the constant news and anxiety with predictable results. Some are avoiding any travel on planes or public transportation. Others are stocking up just in case. One of my colleagues on Facebook wrote that they went to Fred Meyer's, which is a regional grocery store chain in the Northwest, to find hand sanitizer. None was to be found, along with milk, water, disinfectant wipes, face masks, and other items. Now, the Facebook responses were very interesting. Some of them included things that we would take as common sense. Washing hands, and now it's sing happy birthday to yourself twice while you're washing hands. Others were a little bit more creative. Flee the population centers to the high desert and camp out for a month. Other responses implied we were at the apocalypse. So what do we do here? Well, in western Pennsylvania is a bit isolated, and maybe that's good. Right now, people are paying far more attention to options for our health, not only for ourselves, but for others. This is why several people mentioned to me this morning, ought we not be shaking hands with each other? That is taking care not only of ourselves, but one another. I imagine each day with the news coming in from all sides will bring anxiety and worry. That means all of us, including those outside these walls, will have to be agile and adept in how we handle this crisis. Call in sick if we are feeling feverish. Wash our hands frequently, as I've mentioned. So what about here at church? What do we do at our churches has been a major conversation among ministers this last week. Here are some suggestions that have come out of those conversations. Well, again, washing hands and using sanitizer are two already mentioned. Second, and most importantly, we keep tabs on our friends and relatives frequently, daily if necessary. Make sure they're doing okay. Let them know that we're doing okay. In this congregation, we do have a number of shut-ins and elderly. We need to check in with them regularly, which is what I will do, but I hope others here will do as well. Third, if you're getting sick, stay home or get medical help. Fourth, if any of our staff fall ill, we need to have plans in place to do their work until they recover. But here's another recommendation. This isn't a zombie apocalypse. This is not Armageddon. This is not an apocalyptic time. Yes, some people undoubtedly will die, including the first people in the Pacific Northwest in the last 2 days. Most people mention the Spanish flu outbreak in 1918 that killed so many people, including in this country. That's true. But right now, we have far better medical facilities and options than 102 years ago. Trust your intuition. If something is nagging you about going out, pay attention to that concern. Even if you're feeling slightly under the weather, pay attention and stay home, if at all possible. But look out for each other, because that's what community, at the end of it, is all about. And so, both of those terms, the first step and the step beneath our feet, are equally valid. But right now, with each step on this journey we're in, we need to pay attention, be aware, and try to have a sense of calm no matter what. Not just for ourselves, but our children, our grandchildren, our family, and our friends. And do not let fear overwhelm us. Because that's the deadliest danger of all. So let us sing closing hymn number 2.